Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Wow. Welcome to Your Mom is a Check-In.
I'm Sandy Parikh.
I'm Alana Weintraub.
And we are doing this as a bi-weekly check-in episode in between our bi-weekly Your Mom is a Podcast episode.
That's nice.
It's one of my top two favorite formats for the show. easily in the top two. And Alana, hair is wavy and just popping. Yeah. Oh, what's going on right now? Like, why is it a character in a 1940s film right now? You know?
Wow. I think it's doing more of a 70s thing, but honestly, it's just a last minute save. It's a dry shampoo magic secret, which is a thing I don't really want to go into with you because I am pretty sure you don't know what it is.
Wow. That is so offensive.
I'm just not here to woman-splain hair products to you right now, Sandeep. This is a parenting podcast.
How do you think I get this beard so perfect and wavy?
With dry shampoo.
Dry beard shampoo. Hey, do you want to know a fun fact about the word shampoo?
Let's hear it.
It's an Indian word. Shampoo from champu.
That's where we were going.
But did you know that?
I didn't.
Okay, so.
But I knew that if you had a fact about it, it was going to be related to the fact that your people are responsible for it. Do you know the roots of it? Can you follow up that fact with history?
All I know is that it's like champu, and that we were like the first people to wash our hair correctly, which is why we have such good hair, dude.
That makes sense.
That's why you see these Indian women, their hair's like down below their knees.
That's why, do you know that extensions, often when you buy hair extensions, they're from Indian women?
Yeah.
Isn't that just so messed up?
No, it's not. It's fine. It's our natural resource. It's like how the Chileans have copper mines. We have just an abundance of well-shampooed hair.
But just buying other people's body products is such a weird element of capitalism trade.
People need hair, and we provide hair. What do you want from me?
I just hope it's not a scam. I hope the people who are growing their hair out to sell it once every 4 years are making a good living doing that, you know?
It's like Christmas trees.
It's not like that.
Like Christmas tree farms. Like they have to keep replanting. And so they need like different plots to grow at different rates.
That's also a really ridiculous hustle. I hope Christmas tree farmers are getting their fair lot.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, back to the real reason you're here. Okay. We got your mom's check-in. We're going to go deeper into the discussion of the topics that we brought up with our guest last time, which was Ben Sheehan.
Who I loved this episode so much, mainly because Ben is a dear friend and he's such an amazing guest because he's an amazing host of many things.
You said it was your favorite episode of all time.
I am not ready to start ranking our episodes. However, I do also feel like maybe you and I are getting better at this. Like, you know, you have many podcasts. This is my only podcast, so I don't have a lot of opportunities to grow here. And I feel like we're finding our groove.
Yeah, you got to get some reps in there, you know? You got to just hit the gym, You take as many 3-point shots as possible, and they'll start to fall when come game time. Right,
hey,
Milana?
Thanks,
you
coach.
Get it.
I get it.
Yeah, no problem.
It's string cheese, as they say. Okay, so we started this episode with our check-in. I mean, like our pre-show check-in. And that's right. Talked about a few things. Yeah. We talked about Baby Sniffer, which is the character that I bring out around my son, and the many voices you do, which actually comes back in the episode, this idea of play and playfulness and how helpful that is in parenting.
Well, I liked how you put it, when in doubt, play harder.
I think that's actually helpful in relationships too. It's like, if you're struggling, how do you love harder? And it just happens that our kids' love language is play.
I think you're right that it's like all of our love languages are actually play. Like you can always find that, you know, if a conversation is like kind of getting stodgy or boring, or there's like ulterior motives and someone's trying to clearly sell someone on something, the second that it goes to like something playful is when everybody kind of perks up, right? And like kind of leans into the moment of what's happening. Or like, you know, a TED talk is like, the difference between a TED talk and a lecture, I'd say, is that like people who do TED talks like know how to keep it playful while they're doing it, even if they're describing like terrible things happening across the world or something.
Yeah. And I mean, humor is the thing that makes a great like bridesmaid speech great, or a great any way to like keep people's attention is through joy.
That's why I always say that like improv, I think that people underestimate its value as like a life skill.
For
like,
sure.
That like everyone should be taking improv classes at like pretty young ages, ideally, but even if it's never too late to start kind of thing, because I think it is a practice in the art of the conversation, in the art of keeping people's attention, which everyone now knows and talks about as the most commodifiable thing in the world is people's attention, and how valuable that is to be able to grab it, capture it, hold it, and how fleeting it is, and how much more challenging it is now more than ever to continue to do that. So practicing play really, really matters.
I, years ago, watched Pete Holmes open his talk show that he had on CBS way back when. I'm not even sure if a clip of this exists. But he said something that really struck me. I mean, he was just, you know, being funny, but I loved the sentiment behind it, which is when someone is trying to play with you, like when someone cracks a joke,
I love this.
You don't have to do the like, was that funny? That wasn't funny.
You can,
you can just laugh
at it
and or play back, because what that person is doing is giving you an emotional bid of love. They're like, I would like to delight you. And that intention is so pure and kind that for you to say, I don't accept your emotional bit of kindness and love and trying to brighten my day. Actually, I opt out is like a bummer to you, but also a way for you to not practice generosity back, which feels so selfishly good to be generous.
Yeah, he talks about like sort of laughing at bad jokes kind of thing. Like, isn't that the idea? He's like, I'll laugh because I think it's like, he's basically saying yes and.
Yes, yes, and, which going back to what you said is the main principle of improv. And yeah, I think we should maybe teach a improv for parents class. There is a great book that my husband read called Playful Parenting, which is honestly a lot of what you do already, Sandeep, which is like doing the voices, if you're wrestling, letting them win. when your kid is like at the stage that they want to shoot guns, which my 3-year-old is already there.
Oh, yeah. They want to punch something or they want to shoot something for sure.
How do you make it that they're like shooting love rays or shooting spider webs instead of shooting bullets? Or, you know, it's it really is such a strategic way to manipulate your children.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny because I posted that thing that kind of went viral, the clip about playing D&D with your kid in the bath, like the best bath toy is.
Did that go viral?
It did pretty well. I mean, it got like...
I'm so happy for you because I'm happy for me because it was my idea.
Sure. Yes, and.
when you told me that, I was like, Sandeep, you got to make a video about this.
You did say that. Yes, you did absolutely say that. Had I already been thinking it? Yes. Was I trying it out on the show? Yeah. But still.
Did I validate it and kind of push it over the edge?
Yes. Yes. And are you like one of the most important people to validate things that I think are funny or not? Absolutely.
My life. Oh, great.
100%. It got over 500,000 views and it's,
hell yeah,
you know, whatever. But there's a lot of comments in there and some of them are just like, this sounds exhausting, you know? Like this, like, and you know, like, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. If you have all the time in the world to be with your kid during their bath, and I'm just like, okay, mm-hmm. So you're just leaving your kid in the bath? Like, what's happening here? But it's like,
can you recap in just two sentences what that video was?
It just was, hey, the best bath toy is a 20-sided dice. And, that you can play essentially Dungeons and Dragons with your kids in the bath. And it's essentially doing a collective story together. And when you reach a point in the story, like where they have to make a choice or they're just like, oh, and then I convince all the aliens that they should board the ship with me. And you're like, okay, well then roll a die to see if they, if that happens. And they just love it. It's so leaned in. It just really captures their imagination and it really keeps them in the story. It keeps you engaged. It's fun. And so that's why I'm like, hey, this has made bath time so much fun. Cause then I weave in like shampooing and bath and soaping and all that stuff into the story so that I can get through that quicker.
Brilliant.
And so I'm like, my response to those people is that like, yeah, it's, I mean, I want to reframe it in their brains. We're like, actually, the way that you're doing it is swimming upstream and this is the least exhausting. It's actually energizing if you kind of know how to be playful. And by the way, it's more time efficient. You can get, I mean, sometimes our stories are 5 minutes and we're in and out of that bath because I just move them through the paces and I just weave it into the story. But I think you're right that it is sort of a practice that of learning how to be a kid again, to tell stories, to agree with each other, to connect. Those are all things that unfortunately are sort of worked out of us by the time we become adults.
For sure.
What if I told you weight loss is not about willpower, cutting carbs, or working harder in the gym, but instead comes down to flipping a specific switch in your body, one that helps flush out unnecessary calories? Heart surgeon and nutrition expert Dr. Stephen Gundry is revealing a new, simple, but insanely effective way to help get a slim, energized, and healthy body with no deprivation, restrictions, or fads. MCT Wellness can help you flip that switch yourself, from the comfort of your own home. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. All you do is add a scoop to water and enjoy. Help unlock your body's potential by going to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At the beginning of the episode, you talked about your anxiety around leaving your little one to go shoot this big fancy movie with a big fancy set.
I had an overwhelmingly positive experience in every way, including the thing that more experienced moms and dads told me would happen, which is that I came back with a full tank, missing my kid, missing my husband, wanting to be there overtime for everybody. Like the day after I got back, my husband was like, hey, can I go sleep in the other room so that I can get a full night's sleep and that you take care of this kid if he wakes up in the night? And I was so happy to wake up with him. I was like, I got you, bud. Whatever you need. Whereas previously I may have had some frustrations, I was so eager to be. And even now,
the reservoir was full.
Yes, right. My friend, when we used to live in New York, my friend told me the secret to living in New York is leaving it regularly. And I wonder if there's something about parenting, especially maybe motherhood, where something that
requires more
that,
absentee.
Just leave. Something that requires you to be so hands-on, that is so constantly stimulating.
Yeah.
That having a break from that might be a really, really good thing. So
Please talk to my wife about this.
I was gone for 3 weeks, which I do think was too much. There was at the end, they were like, hey, you can go home a day early. And I was like, yeah, please. Like whatever it takes to go home. That definitely did happen. But I had alone time.
3 weeks is a long time. Yeah.
It's a long ass time.
Yeah.
But I had like a few days where I didn't need to go into work early. And I didn't set the alarm and I slept for like 10 hours, my dude. Like
I believe it.
Just my body recovered.
Right.
And and also I got to do the thing where I just let my mind wander, where I would walk around places and didn't, you know, I knew that the time zone in LA wasn't matching up with the time zone in London. And I knew nobody would need me, and I could just not check my phone and go for a walk and think whatever thoughts happened to pop in. And I actually really started to appreciate the magic of mind wandering, which I can't really do much. So, because my day is so scheduled and so full of other stimuli that I had time to just process and think about things and
wander into
a coffee shop. I made a TikTok, by the way, about an amazing coffee shop I found in Chichester. So it was just like a treat. It was just, it was such a treat in many ways. And then also the professional elements of, you know, seeing great people do their thing.
Do you get more jealous of your friends without kids, or do you actually feel like worse for them in a way, because like how does it sort of, or do you even think about that at all?
Oh, I think about people without kids versus people with kids all the time.
Me too. And so I'm wondering if this experience affected that in any way.
You know, I think I had both, and this is a answer or maybe a cheat, because yes, I have one part of me that's like, oh, how nice. You just get to focus on your career, or you just get to travel to this place and do a show here and then travel to this place and try out a new city and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other side of it is that I have this person that fills my life up with something that is different and meaningful. And I think part of it is that it's just not as societally shiny as like, I'm trying out a new city or I have this big, brave career accomplishment. You know what I mean? It's not like as social media worthy. Yeah. However, it feels really personally fulfilling. Yeah.
Cape Town. Yeah. Right.
What do you think? Right. Where do you land on that?
Because I recently spent my most time away from the little dude, but not in a Ryan Gosling movie.
Yeah. You spent 8 days with your dad, who's been unwell. How's he doing today?
Right. He's doing better. This guy just like, I don't know if he's like trying to get like the loyalty rewards card filled up, but for strokes, like to get his fifth one for free or something. But like, he is like, I don't know, man. It's like, he's like literally confounding neurologists. And I'm like, well, I guess there's something to friggin' 8 hours a day of yoga and meditation, because he's doing pretty well, you know, knock on all the wood. And, but yeah, just to kind of come back to the question, which was, you know, I did think a lot about it, and but I found myself like binge watching shows that I just haven't done. And I was like, wow, what's this like again? This is crazy.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. But then I was like, yeah, but this wouldn't feel, it's like, it felt a little bit like candy where you're just like, yeah, this is so good and yummy, but like, it doesn't really quite feel like the meal, you know? I'm like, yeah, it's super fun to have Halloween and to go nuts for a night, but like, I wouldn't want this day in, day out. And so I think I would feel unfulfilled now, but I only think that now having been on the other side of having kids. I don't know that, like it's a little bit like the Matrix, you know, it's like, I wonder if I just sort of took the blue pill kind of thing and like would be the, like, I don't know that I don't know that I would elect to go back, but I doubt that if I didn't take the pill that I would be that upset about it. If that makes sense.
Well, I think part of it is that doing hard things is really fulfilling. Like parenting yeah. is like working out. It is hard to do, but it feels really good afterwards. Or climbing a mountain, or finishing yeah. a project, or even like doing a complicated math problem. Like there's something challenging about it that feels good because you've overcome something to get there. Right. Whereas binging a show is like, or scrolling on social media is easy and perhaps not as fulfilling.
Yeah, but like even, but it's not to say that our friends with kids, without kids, don't do hard work. They do, and
oh,
they accomplish 100%. Many things. And I look at their careers and I'm like, if I didn't have a kid, oh man, you know, like, but like, so I mean, I'm sure they feel very fulfilled.
Yeah.
By those.
And I did before I had a kid.
Would you just fill it with other hard things? But I don't, you know, as I was dealing with the elder care aspect of my life and the kid care aspect and like balancing those and keeping a career going and all that stuff. And it was just like, it's just amazing how we're such sponges
yeah.
and gluttons for taking on monumental tasks. I'm like, how is any yeah. human supposed to be able to do all this? Somehow we pull it off, but it feels like so much.
I think we're not supposed to do all this.
We're not probably. We're probably supposed to have a lot more community
yeah.
to help bear the weight.
Yeah. We're not all supposed to like be paying for our own houses. We're not supposed to be taking care of our own child, being the only person that's taking care of our kid or our elderly, or, you know, this is not yeah. natural and it is exhausting.
Yeah, it's a lot. So now what?
So we figured it out.
So we need better policy that helps people with child care and elderly care and better health care. And
I think yeah. a whole rethinking of the system.
Which starts here. Which I think, well, going back to now our episode, which was like probably our most political episode that we've had in talking to Ben Sheehan and talking about how he introduced us to some new concerns around the election that I never mm-hmm. thought of before. How much that stuff is like, how much our politics are extension of our values mm-hmm. and they are a measuring or a mirror, a funhouse mirror maybe, as to where our societal values really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess how deep do we want to go into this rabbit hole? But it's just scary to me. It's scary to me where we're at and what choices we have right now
yeah.
to lead our country, and the fact that we are even remotely talking about the real possibility of going back to a demagogue. I just can't. I don't know. I'm without words there. But I don't know. How did the sort of politics that Ben was talking about sort of make you feel? Did you feel at all comforted by anything? Like knowing, did knowing make you feel more comfortable, or were you like, oh, we're sure. What's?
I don't ever feel that way. I don't think.
Oh, good. I'm glad
I actually
hear that.
Feel like there's just a lot more we need to work towards improving. And for me, it always falls back on misinformation. I think that's the biggest issue. Maybe that and then money and politics as our two biggest issues, because everyone has a platform. I mean, you and me are bozos, and here we are with microphones in front of us and people who listen. But mm-hmm. There is so much media illiteracy and media manipulation. And also, newspapers are for-profit industries. Newspapers are public, like reputable newspapers are publishing clickbait.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that media for profit and clicks for profit.
It's such a mess. I just did an episode on another podcast where I was talking to someone who used to work at BuzzFeed, and she is now creating this sort of new PR company that's pretty cool. But she just talks about how the current system is so messed up that like even Forbes and all these like really popular,
these
used to be trusted sources now sort of play this game of you get a PR person who pitches a story, the person who wants the story to be published pays to write the story for the publication, which they then just sell ads against, and they do no other real work other than just publishing it and distributing it to their audiences. And there's no there used to be a journalistic lens.
Integrity.
That used to, yeah, some integrity or like some filtration that used to go through, be like, hey, is this a story that is actually meaningful? Or is this just someone just like selling us a bill of goods? That piece doesn't really matter anymore. And there's so many, it's just like a glut of that stuff that is now mixed in with journalistic news, and it's completely shattered public trust in like any of these institutions. It is it's a huge challenge.
So I think that's a thing to take on. When I think about like hope or hopelessness, it just adds to my to-do list of things that I'm going to personally tackle with all my free time.
I know. I was like, how can you personally tackle that? What are you going to do?
I don't know. But I think talking about it is a first step. I think looking at for people who are similarly minded, who are doing good things. You know what I think is actually, this is really true. When we talk about like people who don't have kids or people who do, it's a lot harder to be an activist when you have a kid. It's a lot easier to be empathetic and activated without the time or resources you need to take action. Before I had kids, I was standing there closing down LAX and going to Greek islands and raising money and doing all these things to help different causes. And I don't know if this is an excuse now, but I don't have the same bandwidth to show up even like a day at the polls, you know?
But then there's like people like Jessica Jackley, who we've interviewed.
Yes.
Have three kids and are still like incredible activists.
Four kids.
Things.
Yeah.
Four kids, right?
I know. So I know that I understand that half of what I'm saying is an excuse. And also, this is true. Okay. Last thing I want to talk about, if I may, is a book that you brought up in the last episode called The Panda Problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did you read it?
I have since gotten and read for my son last night, and we were both giggling. He rarely giggles at a book, but we were both laughing out loud. And okay, so for people who haven't read this book, I think it's actually a great book for creatives because it's a book about a narrator and a panda having a conversation. And the narrator is not really supposed to be an opinionated character in a story. And yet the character sets up the world of this panda that lives in a bamboo forest. And then the panda has to overcome something, yet the panda has nothing to overcome. So it's kind of this dialogue between a character and a narrator. And for me, as a creative person, it really resonated with me, even though he loved it and wanted to read it again after we finished it. For me, I loved it as like this is when you sit down and look at an empty page on your computer screen because you need to start writing something. And you're like, okay, so two women walking down the street talking about a date. You know, it's like you're just trying to find something, but there is nothing there. And so that nothing talks back to the writer. The narrator is basically the writer, right?
Yes.
I love when a children's book is a little bit for the adult as well.
Oh, totally. Especially for the creative adult. I think you're right. I will say that when my son and I get into like those bath time D&D stories.
Yeah.
If it's going nowhere a little bit, he'll be like, well, what's the problem? He will say, so what's the problem that we're having? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. I got a conflict. He like can intrinsically kind of feel
that
when the story's getting a little flat. Yeah, we need like a little conflict. It's like suddenly a witch has to come down raining like, you know, fireballs from the sky or something, and he's going to have to deal with it. It's really – so it's a great device to introduce your little kiddos into how to craft a story, and it works at a very young age. It's kind of never too young. I'm pretty sure it was around three when we started reading it with our little one too.
Also, another thing you mentioned, I'm now remembering in the episode with Ben, is how you know, your son will be like, I'm the fastest person in the world. And you're like, hold on, we don't need to be the fastest. But I wonder if that also comes from a need to have a problem. Like, there's a thing I need to overcome. There's a challenge here and there's a happy ending at the end of it. Like, I wonder if that's actually just a human trait of like creating story, and part of being the fastest is a story.
This is sort of basically why when people present me with the idea of heaven and hell, that I choose hell, because I feel like it would be a challenge. There's levels of hell. It feels like there's a way to escape and to like work it out. Whereas heaven sounds boring to me. It's like all jelly beans all the time. And you're just like, I think it's boring. I feel like that would be our own. I think you are right. Like, if you haven't seen The Good Place, by the way, as a show, like, you need to see The Good Place. I think it encapsulates this perfectly, that like actually our real hell would be heaven. And like, we need to feel like we are climbing and we're growing. I think it comes down to growth. I think we feel the best when we feel like we are growing.
Which brings us back to parenthood.
Yeah.
Which is, there is like a challenge in it that gives us a fulfillment.
Because we're opting in to be like, okay, this is going to be so hard, but I know that out of this, somehow I'm going to grow. That's the choice, I think. I think,
and
if you can at least frame it that way,
more,
it'll help you.
And care more and feel more. And I think that's something you told me actually before either of us had kids, when I asked you if you wanted them. And you said, definitely. And I said, really? Yeah. And you said, yes, I think I want the full spectrum of the human experience.
Yeah, it sounded like to me, like if I'm going to go to a theme park, like I want to go to all the parts. And so it'd be like, well, like, you know, there's a whole Pioneer Land. Like, I'm not supposed to go in. Like, I can't go in there. Like, I want to go in there and check it out and see what it's like.
And that being said, I also, you know, I've joked with you before, like, I can't decide if I want another kid or if I shouldn't have had this one. Like, I have both of those feelings at different times. Yeah. And I almost never really think I shouldn't have had this one, but I think a lot about what my life would have been like without my son. And I really believe that I would have always wondered what my life would have been like if I did have one.
Yeah.
That's right. One thing. And then the other thing is, I probably also would have had a completely different full spectrum of emotional experience. Like, I actually don't think that having a kid is the only way to do it. I think there are so many other incredibly fulfilling accomplishments. We just happened to get this one.
Well, beautifully said.
This is a pretty full circle episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure was. Yeah, my takeaway is, when in doubt, play harder. I also liked his whole bit about treating the audience as like geniuses. I thought that was a cool thing.
Oh, I love when he said that.
Yeah.
I think that goes back to like the mouse experiment and expecting greatness from our children.
Yeah, man. I will say that if my kid was Benji and grown up, when he grows up, that would be pretty cool. I'd be pretty good with that.
Yeah, he's not my kid, and I'm proud of him.
Yeah, seriously. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of Your Mom is a Check-In. Please subscribe on all the things, right? The Apples, the Spotify's, wherever you listen to them podcasts. It's been lovely. Have a great day. And hey. Don't freak out. Just play harder. Just play harder.
Play harder. Love harder.
Dream bigger, America! Milana for president. Your Mom is a Podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from Effin' Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok @YourMomIsAPodcast.